Blog Talk Radio.
Well, would the MSM ever admit Trump is right? Not if we can never relax. If not, we can never relax again. In the meantime, what right does the mainstream media have to call other agencies' work fake news when they have been shaping, filtering, editing, and crafting their so-called news products for decades? So who will come out on top in the wiretap hearings? Meanwhile, Alex Jones finds evidence of vast left-wing wiretapping program of Trump for 8 years. Trump and others called Project Dragnet. And, of course, here comes the bias that the left cannot possibly stand to admit. Sports anchor Mark Giangreco's Twitter comments, it turns out, are not in line with ABC7's Chicago nonpartisan editorial standards. The station said in a statement when they decided to suspend the most popular Chicago sports anchor, Giangreco sent out a tweet in which he said, "Donald Trump, a hateful, ignorant, corrupt simpleton, supported by 87% of Republicans." And he added, "America exposed as a country full of simpletons who allowed this cartoon lunatic to be elected." So, anyway, that's the state of so-called reporting these days. And, you know, what can you say? I don't know what else you can really, you know, sum up the problem with bias in the media. 523-1450. I've got this. And today is, by the way, good morning, the 20th of March. And we've got a little bit. I've got a little bit of this story here. A little bit of the clip that I'll play for you. But if it's true, and I have no reason, we know that the government is tapping all the time the phones. Question is, how do they use the information? Do they use it at all? The government wants you to know that they don't really use anything. All they do is keep the stuff on the back burner in case it's needed. But if the president, by definition, has the right to bring up, you have anybody phone tapped or wiretapped or anything that you want to call it. And related to that, during these hearings, this James Comey guy, he was a very, very, you have to admit, a very strange person. It appears that they're not going to be able to make any connection between the Republicans and Trump and Russia. It just doesn't exist. So while this anchor from Chicago is calling, and really all he's doing is he's like a newborn, he's like a three-year-old just repeating what he hears the adults say, stating that there was no, there's no emperor has no clothes. He's just restating that. And at the same time, and it is really sad to hear people like that who are really just attack monkeys, you know, attack chimps, and going after Trump without giving him any kind of a chance whatsoever. So I'm going to play a little bit of this clip for you so you can hear the claim. The claim is that there has been wiretapping that has gone on for 8+ years. And I've got a little bit of this for you. And the people who found this was Joe Arpaio and his chief investigator, who's named Zulo. And I don't know if they did it through FISA, or if they, not FISA, but if they did it through FOIA, Freedom of Information. I don't know how else they would have access to it, but here's a little bit on this. The claim is that there was a program to spy on Trump, whether it was inside or outside of the building. The spying is so massive and it's so easy to do that, so in any event, you see the kind of rabid hatred and really the thing that bothers me, and I've said this many times, but I'll say it again. What bothers me is this fake world that these far lefties have put together, which is like a Lego village. It's like something out of Disneyland, which it looks like it's designed, but when you take a closer inspection of it, it's completely free of any intellectual content, and it's driven by emotion, and the emotion is being used to try to persuade other people to jump on the bandwagon and then destroy their targets through hatred. And these are the people who are claiming that other people are simpletons, you know, and no knowledge of history, no experience in logic or any training in analytic thinking, and just completely bought into the propaganda. It's crazy. But here's a little bit of the claim that Project Dragnet was used to spy on Trump and family and many others ever since Obama was in office.
U.S. directs agents to cover up program. So it's all right there. Now, we know that Dragnet exists.
This is Alex Jones who broke the story.
Did exist. And Electronic Frontier Foundation says at least up to 2016, it's still ongoing. It's a very respected nonpartisan group. But now, we have our law enforcement sources. I'm being very careful about this because I don't just do this as a matter of protecting myself. I have law enforcement sources and others, and then I have investigative journalists that have long histories of doing this for decades, like Corsi, who now works for InfoWars, setting up our Washington Bureau, who know how to do it legally and lawfully. Because let me tell you, I've talked to lawyers, I've talked to others when I got secret FBI manuals and other things, and I had family that had been in intelligence agencies say, "You're lucky you're alive, man." You know, the stuff about veterans, the number one enemy, there's a national gun confiscation plan. All that stuff nobody believed for a week when we broke it, the MIAC report. Remember the veterans of the terrorists? And then Napolitano, Janet Napolitano, the bad Napolitano, not Judge Napolitano, came out and said, "Oh, yes, we are saying the veterans the number one enemy. That's a real manual." Well, this is bigger than that, okay? It's up on Infowars.com, NSA database documents, NSA electronic surveillance of Donald Trump in Trump Tower and Alex Jones in Texas. And it goes through it and has screenshots of the real documents, but the phone numbers are X'd out, and that's done in the database until you get authorization to get into. You have to have secret clearance to get into it. But when state police and federal law enforcement want it, they've got to get authorization from special boards that are very shadowy to get into it. Then it unlocks it all. But I know these phone numbers. I've called Trump. He's called me on these numbers. It's all right here. Of course, Trump's the president. He knows way more than this when he says he knows he's been surveilled. Well, it turns out he's been surveilled by Obama and even before. So this is huge. It's on Infowars.com right now. We're updating the article and adding new documentation as it goes. So if you've already been looking at it, hit refresh. Let's go to Dr. Corsi. We've got 5 minutes till break. We'll come back. And we have the detective with the cold case posse, with the outgoing sheriff in Maricopa County, Sheriff Arpaio, who's been bravely involved in all this as well. So give us a boil down of how big this is, Dr. Corsi.
Well, this is a tremendous find. I mean, this Mike Zulu and Sheriff Arpaio have had project database records they got from a whistleblower. They've been proving them out. They've had them since 2013. Now, it was really over the past week when I started talking with Mike Zulu, and we realized that Donald Trump was in this database. He searched it for it, and we're posting it on InfoWars right now. Donald Trump has been wiretapped, electronic surveillance, all over the place. Certainly Trump Tower, but also Mar-a-Lago, various companies that he's owned, golf courses since 2004, continuing into 2009 when Obama came into office, and we have no reason to believe it quit. Now, you know, you can't read them, but they come out as these huge pages of logs and logs and logs that show the names and the businesses, the addresses, the phone numbers that were harvested.
And to protect the innocent, we're only releasing very limited amounts.
Right. We're really going to try to be very careful in what we're going to release on this, because we're, you know, we're not printing the actual documents. But there's probably a million records, a million people's under electronic surveillance in this one database that was handed over to law enforcement and Sheriff Arpaio's office. And what it shows is that everybody associated with Trump, in other words, once the NSA picked up Trump, anyone Trump called was then picked up as well. So you've got a whole list of his employees here, and we're listing the employees. I think we'll want to make sure we don't include the phone numbers that was in some of the original records, but I've redacted everything. Phone numbers aren't there, so you could, but you know, call them. But project managers, the Trump Organization, people running his golf courses.
And by the way, you called me last week with the sources and said, yeah, is this your cell? Yeah, that's my old cell. Yeah, this is your private office? People always come to the warehouse, you know, and then, yeah, there it is. I've moved out of that other office, too. This is wild. So, again, let's talk about the sourcing of this. This is big. I mean, this is huge. This is proving that, oh, yeah, and this is just the database we had a hold of, that Obama, when he was in office, was involved in the surveillance of President Trump before he was president.
Yes, and also through the time he was president. Obama was continuing the wiretapping and his Operation Dragnet, and I think he continued it through his entire administration. The point of all this is that, you know, this is, again, documentation that Trump was under electronic surveillance in a much more massive way than I think Trump even realizes. I mean, all of his Trump palace was – They were actually, these records show that Ivana Trump was under surveillance, and Fred Trump, which seems to me to be the father, under surveillance. They have employees of Trump, so that's a massive dragnet of pulling in. And it was not only the phone messages, but then they did electronic surveillance of all the financial records. They went and got bank records, they had credit card transaction records, tax records, and it was all compiled into massive databases on Trump going back to 2004, and I think continuing until today.
By the way, it's incontrovertible. That's what I'm having added to the article, that the New York Times said in four different articles in January that they were surveilling Trump, that they had the wiretaps, the NSA intercepts. And so we have all these other admissions of the Senate being spied on, you name it.
So we've got a police state that is so big that it probably doesn't even – it's taking in so much information, it probably is not even aware of itself in every instance how far the reach is. Now, if all people are being spied on and their information is being scooped up, as we listened to in previous shows, you have Dragnet, the program that – or pardon me, Stingray – you have fake cell towers in cities across the United States scooping up, recording calls and numbers. You have, I'm trying to remember the name of all the different programs that they use. They use another program to get all the emails and texts. And there's nothing that they don't try to get or get. And Trump has this joke that people actually were laughing at, and I'm going to try to see. I'm sure I can find it here. By the way, Trump has Merkel, and you know, this leader of Germany, and she says, somebody says, can we get a handshake? Because there was a handshake between Trump and Trudeau, the Canadian chancellor, the prime minister up there. And so Trump sits there and said, and people keep yelling, handshake, handshake, you know, photo op. And Trump just sits there and pretends like he doesn't even really pretend like he doesn't hear it. He just sits there with kind of a smile on his face. And Angela Merkel is going, handshake, Donald. handshake. So here's what he says about the fact that they've both been wiretapped.
After these claims are rejected, what is your take on that? Are there other suspects, or do you think it was a mistake to blame?
Foreign press basically telling Trump that he was wrong about being
British intelligence for this. And by the way, my second question, are there from time to time tweets that you regret in hindsight?
Very seldom. We have a tremendous group of people that listen, and I can get around the media when the media doesn't tell the truth. So I like that. As far as wiretapping, I guess, by, you know, this past administration, at least we have something in common, perhaps. And just to finish your question, we said nothing. All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it. That was a statement made by a very talented lawyer on Fox. And so you shouldn't be talking to me. You should be talking to Fox. Okay?
Thank you.
Interesting response there. And Angela Merkel was astounded and shocked and troubled when she found out that her phone calls were being eavesdropped by the NSA. And that's just, folks, that's just the top. That's just the first layer. We'll take a break here and come back on this. But I want to get into the media bias, but we'll come back and do a little stroll through the headlines. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. So glad you woke up, whether you had to, whether by choice or by necessity, and joined me this morning. And 805-6180 is your text line. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down.
Refrigerated air.
Hey, I just realized I was clearing my throat with a microphone on. I do apologize. It's that time of the year, isn't it? The time of suffering, the spring. I'm looking around and seeing pollen and flowers everywhere. So time to get ready for that. All right. So I've got this story where this guy calls this Mark Gian Greco, who's the number one sports anchor in Chicago. And I mentioned this in the opening. So Donald Trump is a hateful. He is a hateful, ignorant, corrupt simpleton supported by 87% of the Republicans. And America exposed as a country full of simpletons who allowed this cartoon lunatic to be elected. And, you know, as we've discussed many times on the program, whether you're a Democrat or Republican in this county, I would think that, or listening to the show anyway, I would think that there's a much more moderate, unless you're Frankie, who's no longer well enough to call into the show, and he has to laying in his bed with a little bottle of Jameson's, tweeting out the occasional statements. But you know, you've got these people, and this is the sad thing about far leftism, which is not the same as run of the mill liberalism. It is a belief system that teaches people that they're smarter, they are better educated. Now, as we've all experienced, education and political orientation are two different things. And we've got to, you know, we've always got to be on our guard for these people because they're always in attack mode. But the fact of the matter is what they stand for, the far left, is not just disagreement, but denigration. You disagree with them because you're ignorant. You're ignorant, you're biased, or you're evil. And mostly ignorant. So that's why it's important to take these people on. That's why I like to see individuals like Tucker Carlson, who's able to get up and without being rude, or at least minimizing the rudeness, challenging these people on their stuff. Now, here's Terry Moran, another talking head, another person who looks down on anybody on the right. Check this out. Trump's a laughingstock. Why? Because Terry Moran says it.
Merkel, Theresa May, and Britain want to get beyond this.
Totally. He's got an agenda in the world which is disruptive, like his agenda at home. They want to come to terms with it. He's been sent by the American people to change things, right? And they're ready to do business with him. Theresa May, in particular, she's kind of on that side of the ledger. Instead, it's like Yik Yak, that high school, social media app where people say, well, I heard somebody said something about him, about her. And they're lost in the weeds of this adolescence out of Washington. So that the primary feeling is not, we don't like the president's agenda. He's president of the American people. We can't deal with this guy.
Having lived through a White House where people said George W. Bush.
All right. So, yeah, we've been through that with Bush and everything as well. But how do you deal with a movement whose primary goal, and I'm just going to, I'll always quote Jonathan Chait on this, is the delegitimization of dissent. So, you know, a lot of this stuff reminds me, and I'm kind of listening to it and thinking about this last night, but this is kind of a repeated theme, is that you've got these, it's like on sitcoms or on TV shows, there are only so many stories to tell, right? And Aristotle said this himself, there's only so many stories out there. One of them is tragedy. Another one is comedy. Another one is romance. And so the way the left sets this stuff up is like puppet theater, you know, like we've already communicated to you that Trump is this, what did the guy call him? The hateful, ignorant, corrupt simpleton. That's it right there. Hateful, ignorant, corrupt, simple. That's all of the insults that the left throws against the right in one convenient sentence. Hateful, ignorant, corrupt, simpleton. So people on the right need to sit down and shut up because they're hateful, they're corrupt, they're ignorant, they're simpletons. And that's how the left sees themselves as preeminently worldly, urbane, educated, high-minded, open-minded, educated. And so the people that disagree with leftism are opposed to those things. Now, people forget there is a tendency for, I mean, you guys understand it, but there's a tendency for people to either be of the left and get into these things. They get into media, they get into politics. You know, they want power, they want influence, they want fame, they want money to get into the media. And then they pretend like they're there to represent the truth instead of just having an opinion. I think this is the single most destructive thing that we've got going on right now, is this myth, this fantasy, this set of fables that paints the far left as being pure-hearted, above bias, committed to the total good. But when you see these people and their leftism comes out so far, how do they even stay in the media like Moran? You know, here's Fareed Zakaria from CNN talking about Trump. And I finally found one clip that was bleeped out, fortunately, calling Trump a success by BSing.
I think the president is somewhat indifferent to things that are true or false. He has spent his whole life. He has succeeded by. He has gotten the presidency by. It's very hard to tell somebody at that point that doesn't work, because look at the results, right? But that's what he does. He sees something, he doesn't particularly care if it's true or not, he just puts it out there.
Yeah.
And then he puts something else out. And notice again what he did at this press conference. When pushed on it, he doesn't take responsibility.
So four different times within 10 seconds, he says that Trump is a BSer. Now, let me ask you, why is it, let's just say for the sake of the argument, this guy's true. Everything that Trump has achieved is through BS. Why is it bad for Trump to do it, but it's okay for the mainstream media to do it? Because you know they're constantly lying. They're filtering information. They're shaping it. They're shifting it. I think it applies as much to the media as it does to Trump, because at least in a politician, you expect there to be bias. They're representing their party, their belief system. The media is supposed to show up and just tell the truth and let the listeners or the readers pick through the facts and make their own decision. Does anybody think Fareed Zakaria is unbiased? Does anybody think Terry Moran is unbiased? Or any of these other clowns? Kelly O'Connell, 637 AM Las Cruces, rhetorical question, 523-1450 and 805-6180. We will be back. Many, many, many stories today to cover.
Strange faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Good morning, Kelly. This is Bob.
Hey, Bob, what's up? How you doing?
Good, sir. Is this a good day or a bad day for me to talk?
It's a great day, Bob. What are we going to talk about?
Well, I just want to talk about how I've noticed that the liberals or the far left, they're very resentful people, and that's a cause of a lot of the problems.
Okay, all right. Bob, let me put you on hold, and then I'll bring you on in about one and a half two minutes.
Take your time, Billy.
All right, just hang in there. Don't hang up.
All right.
Thanks. Bob.
Yes.
We're almost on, but you know, hold on a second. Just make your point, hit it and quit it, okay? Because the number one complaint people have when I talk to them is that the callers go on too long. So
I know. Yes, sir.
I try to make sure everybody has a chance to say their piece, but if people are always complaining, then it needs
to... I know that.
And you probably hear people that on the show that go on too long, and you're probably...
Well, they're good people, but I appreciate you.
Yeah, no, you know what I'm saying. It's nothing...
Yes, sir, I do.
Nothing personal, but we're on in
no,
about...
No, I know. We're friends.
So, it looks like spring is here, huh?
You didn't make it to Steve Pierce's, did you?
No.
Okay, that's all right.
What was it like?
It was fun.
Well, I bet it was.
Yeah, well, it was full
Bob.
Of liberals. It was so full. I mean,
Bob.
Full of Democrats.
Bob,
and,
please listen, Bob.
They're very unruly.
Bob, listen to me. We're on the air.
Okay.
Listen to me if I say anything.
I will, sir.
All right, folks, we have Bob on the air. Bob, yes, you wanted to talk about bias?
Yes. Good morning, Kelly.
Morning.
I went to Steve Pierce's town hall this weekend, and it was very interesting. And what I've noticed is that a lot of the liberals or the far left, they're very resentful type of people. They're very unruly. And I was very surprised to, observe that. So that was my comment, and I just have a good day.
Yeah, no, what I mean, so what did you hear that don't breathe into the phone, please.
All right, sir.
So what did you notice that was hateful and resentful?
What I noticed most of all, they really believe in our land, our country, and they want total freedom, and that means not being reverent. They don't believe in reverency, and that's not a good sign. That's not a good way to live. It's a very unhappy way to live a life.
Well, you know, Bob, don't they come across as if they don't get to call the shots if something happens that's not in a part of their plan? That they can act any way they want. They can, you know, pull down the pillars of the temple if they want to. They can smash and scream and revolt.
Yes, they're very immature is the word I can come up with. They're like kids. And I don't know. You know, I mean, they're Americans, and I love them very much. But, you know, you can't have unruly people running the chicken coop, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I get real nervous when I call you, and I love you all very much. And when I have something really good to say is when I'll call back.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Have a great day. Good call. All right, folks. Well, I think there's some substance to that. I think that, we're going to... All right, here's what I think the problem with the far left is. And if you study the history of leftism, you will see this in spades over and over again. They'll complain about food for the poor, money, whatever. Basic claim of socialism is that the rich steal from the poor. This is Marxism. So when they're in control, how are the poor treated? Well, I would challenge you to go on YouTube or go on the internet and look for a story on Venezuela, and you tell me if having to break into a zoo to kill an animal is the way you get meat, if that's a good way to treat the poor. We have another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Kay.
Kay, thanks for the call. Hope you're well.
Oh, I am well. I was at the town hall meeting Saturday. My goodness, these are supposed to be better educated. They came across as a bunch of ignorant children, not there to be informed, not there to get answers to their questions, just there to be rude, loutish, pleasant. I got there, after all, the seats were filled, so I was standing against the back wall, which was good because I would have felt very uncomfortable sitting down in the midst of that rabble.
Did you, Kay, did you recognize any, was there anybody in there that, you kind of saw, recognized as a local, you know, local liberal or a local person that you knew?
No, I didn't recognize any of them. Only I know a lot of more of my neighbors. I live up in Talavera. It was sort of disappointing. I thought we knew better.
You should have come up and asked them about the trailer park. That would have really sent them off.
Oh, well, it in a way it was rather unsettling that these people could not behave in a more courteous, refined manner.
It's the history of leftism to do everything available to take power, because they're going to build a utopia, they're going to build a heaven on earth, and they're going to force everybody into it. And along the way, a lot of people are going to get killed.
Well, it certainly was not very edifying.
It sounds dreadful, but I'm glad that you reported. What was the highlight of the whole thing?
For me, the highlight of the thing was all of this shouting of shame, 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 liar, 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 and this continual disruption.
You're kidding.
No, I am not kidding. But I'll tell you, Congressman Pierce had so much poise and so much patience. I would just have wanted to tell him to all shut up, go home, and grow up.
Well, so there's this army of activists that have been put together in, I'm trying to remember, I think it's OFA, Organization for Advancement or whatever it's called. It's this thing that Obama put together, and it's a national community organizer organization, and these people are sent as paid. And I'm sure there's volunteers too, but there are paid workers that go to every event and try to show how terrible and failed Trump is, and to try to show that America needs other leadership. And I mean, do you think that's going to pay off for them?
I have no idea, but it certainly for me said that this is not a group that I ever want to have power. I'm not big on going to these things. But I did Saturday, and I just thought, my God, it's frightening.
Mm-hmm. It's Lord of the Flies, isn't it? It's the children are trying to get a hold of the power, and then they're going to use it to destroy anybody that disagrees with them.
Yeah, the sad thing is, not sad thing, but they don't seem to realize they'll destroy themselves in the process.
That is one of the themes in from the beginning of the socialist movement. Is the first generation said we are willing to die ourselves to achieve our goals. And it's from, if I found that in a book called From Beneath the Rubble, and it was Solzhenitsyn was one of the writers of that. But anyway, they don't care, because it is a suicide cult mentality when you tap down into the center of the beliefs. It's like you said, it's very scary. I've got to go, Kay. Anything else?
Yes. No, nothing Thanks. Else.
Great,
have a good day.
Great call. All right, folks, that's a good call right there. Let me take you into some weather right now. We'll be back. All right. So I've got a lightning round here for you. So I forgot I was told you I was going to get the headlines. This is from Trump. Elon Musk preparing the first private moon landing. Gallup, Trump approval, lowest ever, 37%. And due in part to a bumpy early week slow agenda, a man jumps the fence at the White House and is walking around for 17 minutes. How is that possible? He even went up to a door and checked to see if it was open. Uber president quits, a lot of turmoil there. NSA documents surveillance on Trump family, Project Dragnet. Brazil, all kinds of problems. And they have issues with spoiled meat over there. Canada has got huge problems with a lot of illegal immigrants coming up there. And so 50% of the people want them kicked out. Malibu becomes a sanctuary city. There's more than 500. What should the government do? Beer maker crafting a brew with treated sewage. I wonder what it's called. Police drone army over London for various reasons. Rand Paul, healthcare will fail. And Supreme Court's ideological balance at stake. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And I think, okay, here I've got a little clip, got a little comedy for you. Hope it works out. Here we go. This is Ivan Decker. Main thing is no cussing, kids. Oh, hold on a second here. The system, I had to reboot the system. It froze up.
Man, now, strange. I had to give up, really cut back on video game time. That's something about being an adult. Because it gets harder and harder to justify playing video games for an extended period of time. Because everybody has those friends. They're like, where were you all weekend? They're like, new Call of Duty came out. You're like, that was what you did? Yeah. And then you'd be like, what? That's, you did that just inside? I'm like, no, it's good. It's good for you. It's good for you. It's good for your hand eye. There's been studies. I'm like, you're 30. Your hand eye's probably fine. I think you're waking up in the morning, like trying to get a spoon for some oatmeal, like, whoops, wah! I mostly stop, though, because I'm not good at them. And everybody always gives you, like, the story argument. That's my favorite one. We're like, it's the best way to experience a story, because you're in the story. I'm like, it's not the best way. The best way to experience a story is a book. Want to know why? Because I've never been reading a book and gotten halfway through that book and realized that I sucked at the book. Had to go back and redo the same chapter 8 times because the word at the end of the chapter was too hard. That doesn't happen. You learn things from books. You're immersed in culture, right? You read a period piece, you can learn all about ancient Rome. There's a video game set in ancient Rome. It's like, what did you learn about ancient Rome? If you stab people in the face with a spear, they die. Anything else? Yeah, later on, there's people with armor on the front, so you got to go around back and stab them in the back. Good for you. I do like being part of this generation, though. I think it's great. I'm happy to be a part of the generation that was responsible for introducing lasers to cats. That was us. We did that. Future generations are going to be like, cats and lasers, always together? Nope, not always. It was us. We did it. We took this thing that was billions of dollars in development and lowered it down to that. We all had very high hopes for lasers in the 80s. Imagine explaining that to somebody now. I mean, like, oh, you're from 2015? What do you guys use lasers for there? Mostly cats. What do you mean, like giant cats have taken over? You have to kill them with laser cannons? Nope, just regular cats. Explain in detail. Well, sometimes in the future, you want to play with a cat, and you don't want to get out of a chair. Lasers have come a long way.
All right, so Ivan Decker. Main thing for radio comedy is no cursing. That's what I've learned. All right, so we're going to talk about what's happening today in Congress. I've got a little bit of news on North Korea. You're going to love that, since we're supposed to be in a fight with them. And a few other things here. What else is there? Bees. There's a bee crisis. There is a bee crisis, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. But we'll take a break here on the hour. So great to hang out with you. Really wonderful. High spot of my day. Take a break and come back. AM Les Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. Kelly O'Connell.
No one remembers your name when you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down.
All right, so we've got testimony coming down, going down, being offered in Washington, D.C. over the question of whether there was Russian collusion in the election. And so the best that they can do is to claim that there was an impression. The idea being that circumstantially they can establish that there was something going on, which I don't think that they can do. So my question is, are they going to be able to turn Trump into the next Sarah Palin, but just pour total hatred on Trump and then turn him into this laughingstock where everything he does is a joke, everything has a punchline, everything has a laugh track to it? And I don't think so. I think that Sarah Palin was unlucky in that the Republican Party was not, and this is just a hallmark, a highlight, a trait of the Republicans, is the Republicans act like they're caught in some sort of a struggle with the left in which they have to establish their credibility. In doing so, they have to be willing to admit faults and to criticize their own, something that the left, for the most part, wouldn't do. They certainly wouldn't do it to get credibility from the Republicans or from the conservatives, because they really don't care about the opinion of the conservatives or the Republicans. What they are intent on doing is destroying. So a person who has a vice presidential candidate like Sarah Palin, who then is attacked, and the Republicans just stand there and look on and shrug, not my problem, and then they join in, and now I would say probably a majority of Republicans, or at least a high percentage, would say Sarah Palin was a terrible idiot. You know, the same thing that they said about Trump, the same claim. That's what I'm trying to say. The way that people are attacked by the left is very simplistic. It's like puppet theater. It's always the same claim from a slightly different angle. A hateful, ignorant, corrupt simpleton. You can take that statement, the very self-righteous statement, and which was made by Mark Giangreco, this sports broadcaster from Chicago. You can put that into any discussion up by the left of the right. It's always the same thing. You don't agree because you're not educated. If you're educated, you'd be enlightened. And this is why I was telling you a couple of months ago that the modern left believes in some sort of theory of some sort of a variation of Gnosticism. In the ancient world, You had paganism, you had Christianity, but you had this group that comes out of the East, the Gnostics, and they taught that salvation comes through education, through enlightenment. And that's what the left is. The left has rejected this idea that salvation comes through faith, and instead it comes through education. So you call people hateful, ignorant, corrupt, simpleton. That is a summary of how they approach every single... The reason you don't agree with a person on the left is you're either too stupid, you're a simpleton, you're uneducated, you're hateful. Let's see the four words here. Hateful, ignorant, corrupt, simpleton. Or you're corrupt. I mean, those are, so, you know, represents the modern age going forward, getting rid of religion and absorbing, embracing this idea of this Gnostic idea that we're saved through education. But the only problem with that is every single time that's been applied, it's blown up in people's faces. So, all right, let me play for you a little bit more of what they found. And by the way, I would just mention illegals in Canada. The Canadian border authorities are detaining a record number of Mexicans who are self-deporting. Now, at some point, they're going to throw up the white flag as well. You can only take in so many refugees. 30 countries, according to the Daily Caller, 30 countries are refusing to take back illegal immigrants convicted of serious crimes. Right? So, according to the prophet and Lord of the Earth, Barack Obama, we had to take all these people in, right? We had to. There was, I don't remember him explaining or defending why they had to stay here. He just, you know, acted like he was a bishop or something. But the people are so bad that Obama insisted that we embrace and drive around the country and drop off in various small communities that didn't have the infrastructure to take them on. But the original countries, 30 countries have said, we don't want them, we will not take them. What does that tell you? It tells you that tells you the obvious thing, that these are terrible people and they can't even get back into their own country. All right, here's a little bit more on what they discovered in this Operation Dragnet that was used to spy on Trump for 8 years. And undoubtedly, Trump is just one figure in a massive list of people that the Obama administration or whoever pulled the trigger on this, but I mean, Obama must have known about it at some point, that they felt like they had to spy on.
Vice President Obama was continuing the wiretapping of this Operation Dragnet, and I think he continued it to his...
This guy speaking is Jerome Corsi. He's a Yale graduate who's had a number of bestsellers, and he works with Alex Jones now.
Entire administration. The point of all this is that, you know, this is, again, documentation that Trump was under electronic surveillance in a much more massive way than I think Trump even realizes. I mean, all of his Trump palace was, they were actually, these records show that Ivana Trump was under surveillance, and Fred Trump, which seems to me to be the father, under surveillance. They have employees of Trump. So it's a massive dragnet of pulling in. And it was not only the phone messages, but then they did electronic surveillance of all the financial records. They went and got bank records, they had credit card transaction records, tax records, and it was all compiled into massive databases on Trump going back to 2004, and I think continuing until today.
By the way, it's incontrovertible. That's what I'm having added to the article, that the New York Times said in four different articles in January that they were surveilling Trump, that they had the wiretaps, the NSA intercepts. And so we have all these other admissions of the Senate being spied on, you name it. So the claim that Trump's discredited and that none of this happened and that agencies say it didn't happen, well, I mean, we famously have Clapper in front of the congressional committee saying that the NSA spies on no one in the U.S. when it's completely admitted they are.
I mean, as I say, we're not going to release the list, but these go on. There's a million names on these lists. And what these lists show is the name of the person, the file number, the business, the address.
And the file's key. This is a database of who you want to go in and then hear the files. So this is a database to index, like a library. Go in and then you want to hear them, track their whole history. There it is.
And the phone numbers. Now, all the phone numbers, and law enforcement, Mike Zullo and Sheriff Arpaio have been checking this out for a long time. The phone numbers all check. You saw your own record in this database, Alex, and proved out that that was all authentic information.
Oh, it's got a phone number nobody even knew, and it's got an address I used and secretly broadcast out of. We'll be back. I'll come right back to you. All right.
So we've got this information now. The problem is putting it all into perspective. Why would the New York Times talk about wiretaps? I'm sure New York Times is probably upset that it came out the way that it did. But what's going on here? I would think that there's a bigger picture. They had the information on Trump, and I think for Trump's perspective, information came out that he didn't tell anybody. He did, just told one person, and he knew that that person had not leaked it. But you're talking about a massive. I mean, I don't see where you would differentiate between a specific wiretap or specifically searching for information from one person and the massive wiretapping that they do, because they have a supercomputer that they've built at Bluffdale in Utah. I'm trying to remember, its name is Colossus or something like that. It must be one of the strongest computers in the world, but it can go through all this information very quickly, and probably very quickly find individuals that it needs, and then start connecting the dots. So what is the difference between that and doing a specific wiretap? There may not be much difference, and it depends on who had the information and what they did with it. All right, we'll take a break here, and let me we've got a couple other topics to get into. Kelly O'Connelly, I'm Les Cruz, the same 1450. I'm going to get into North Korea just a little bit. We're supposed to have the war with North Korea if they don't stop threatening to blow us up. 718 AM, Les Cruz, the same 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, the Doors.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, that touch me, babe. And you see that I am not afraid. What was that promise that you made?
Good news, Patriot fans. They got the jersey back. Interestingly enough, the FBI and NFL security teamed up to find the stolen jersey from Super Bowl 51. It's going to be returned. And the most interesting part, and it makes you wonder why the CIA was not involved, is it's now on foreign soil, and it's going to be returned. The jersey worth $500,000, something like that. All right, so let me get into something here, because I'm going to get into North Korea for you, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it would be worthwhile to listen to something from Glenn Greenwald, who was the guy he was involved in the Snowden. I think initially he lives in Brazil. He's an attorney, and he now works as a journalist, and he's very much opposed to the deep state taking over everything. Here is a little bit of a description of the last 8 years being a war by journalists started by Obama.
Boy, Allowing the use of anonymous sources. Glenn, you have said that the president's right when he says some of these leaks are illegal, meaning people are sharing information illegally. But you say it's justified. Why is it justified?
If you look at the reporting of the people who are on this panel, what you see is that some of the most important revelations that have strengthened American democracy have come from people inside the government, as Dana said, discovering information and then giving it to reporters because they believe that the people have the right to know that their leaders were engaged in illegal or deceitful conduct. That's what happened with the leakers who exposed General Flynn's lies. And although the conduct is illegal, it's also, in my view, quite noble because it strengthens democracy. The problem is that if you look at the last 8 years, there has been a very concerted war on not just sources and whistleblowers, but also journalists, implemented by not Donald Trump, but by the Obama administration. More sources prosecuted under the 1917 Espionage Act than in all previous administrations combined. Journalists such as James Rosen at Fox News and Jim Risen at the New York Times, and those of us who work on the Snowden reporting, constantly threatened with prosecution or having our phone records subpoenaed and the like. And Democratic office holders in D.C. were virtually unanimous in the idea that people who leak information that's classified are villains, they're traitors, they ought to go to prison. And this framework has been created, both rhetorical and legal, over the last 8 years that says that people who leak classified information, regardless of how important that information is, ought to be punished. And that's the rhetoric and the framework that Donald Trump is seizing on. And it's the reason why it's been so damaging to have watched Democrats who suddenly love leaks, now that it's helping them, have waged such an aggressive war on journalism and investigative reporting over the last 8 years.
But you notice,
go ahead, Dana.
No, but you notice that nobody's backing down. And that's,
people are not backing down because of the fact that they're going after Trump. I mean, it's a simplistic way to attack people, but it's highly effective. And if you can't use political correctness, you move on to something else, which is leaked information. And here's a little bit more from Glenn Greenwald on the danger of feeding the deep state.
In early January, Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer appeared on the Rachel Maddow Show and suggested the intelligence community may try to get back at Donald Trump.
Let me tell you, you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
That was the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer in January. Some supporters of Trump, including Breitbart News, are now accusing the intelligence agencies of attempting to wage a deep state coup against the president. Meanwhile, some critics of Trump are openly embracing such activity, like Bill Kristol, the prominent Republican analyst who founded the Weekly Standard. He wrote on Twitter, "Obviously, strongly prefer normal democratic and constitutional politics, but if it comes to it, prefer the deep state to the Trump state."
That is absolutely insane. And here's a guy, Bill Kristol, who acted as if he was the conscience and soul of the Republican Party, and now he's calling for a coup. That's crazy. 726, 727, flying those friendly skies, those bumpy skies. We'll be right back.
Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made?
All right, so we've got this situation. Here's a little bit more on the deep state, which is trying to chew apart Donald Trump. Because why? Because it cares about America? No, because it wants power.
So still with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept, speaking to us from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Glenn, explain what the deep state is and respond.
The deep state, although there's no precise or scientific definition, generally refers to the agencies in Washington that are permanent power factions. They stay and exercise power even as presidents who are elected come and go. They typically exercise their power in secret, in the dark, and so they're barely subject to democratic accountability if they're subject to it at all. It's agencies like the CIA, the NSA, and the other intelligence agencies that are essentially designed to disseminate disinformation and deceit and propaganda, and have a long history of doing not only that, but also have a long history of the world's worst war crimes, atrocities, and death squads. This is who not just people like Bill Kristol, but lots of Democrats are placing their faith in, are trying to empower, are cheering for as they exert power separate and apart from, in fact, in opposition to the political officials to whom they're supposed to be subordinate. And this is not just about Russia. You go all the way back to the campaign, and what you saw was that leading members of the intelligence community, including Mike Morrell, who was the acting CIA chief under President Obama, and Michael Hayden, who ran both the CIA and the NSA under George W. Bush, were very outspoken supporters of Hillary Clinton. In fact, Michael Morrell went to the New York Times and Michael Hayden went to the Washington Post during the campaign to praise Hillary Clinton and to say that Donald Trump had become a recruit of Russia. The CIA and the intelligence community were vehemently in support of Clinton and vehemently opposed to Trump from the beginning. And the reason was because they liked Hillary Clinton's policies better than they liked Donald Trump's. One of the main priorities of the CIA for the last 5 years has been a proxy war in Syria designed to achieve regime change with the Assad regime. Hillary Clinton was not only for that, she was critical of Obama for not allowing it to go further and wanted to impose a no-fly zone in Syria and confront the Russians. Donald Trump took exactly the opposite view. He said, we shouldn't care who rules Syria. We should allow the Russians and even help the Russians kill ISIS and Al-Qaeda and other people in Syria. So Trump's agenda that he ran on was completely antithetical to what the CIA wanted. Clinton's was exactly what the CIA wanted, and so they were behind her. And so they've been trying to undermine Trump for many months throughout the election, and now that he won, they are not just undermining him with leaks, but actively subverting him. There's claims that they're withholding information from him on the grounds that they don't think he should have it and can be trusted with it. They are empowering themselves to enact policy. Now, I happen to think that the Trump presidency is extremely dangerous. You just listed off in your newscast that led the show many reasons. They want to dismantle the environment. They want to eliminate the safety net. They want to empower billionaires. They want to enact bigoted policies against Muslims and immigrants and so many others. And it is important to resist them. And there are lots of really great ways to resist them, such as getting courts to restrain them, citizen activism, and most important of all, having the Democratic Party engage in self-critique to ask itself how it can be a more effective political force in the United States after it has collapsed on all levels. That isn't what this resistance is now doing. What they're doing instead is trying to take maybe the only faction worse than Donald Trump, which is the deep state, the CIA, with its histories of atrocities, and say they ought to almost engage in like a soft coup where they take the elected president and prevent him from enacting his policies. And I think it is extremely dangerous to do that. Even if you're somebody who believes that both the CIA and the deep state on the one hand and the Trump presidency on the other are extremely dangerous, as I do, there's a huge difference between the two.
All right. So I actually think I played a little bit of that clip before, but I think it bears to, pay attention to this, because what's going on is so much different than what we're being told. But the media has engaged in a war on the presidency. The media has engaged in a war on the right because, I mean, to boil it back down again, it's a delegitimization campaign against the people that are opposed to it. So that's why Fareed Zakaria gets up and curses over and over and over again against Trump. And that's why Terry Moran says that Trump is a laughingstock. And that's why, I mean, pick whoever you want out of the media. You've got so many people that have thrown their reputations down to try to destroy him. And they're so frustrated because, remember, the media used to be able to destroy at will, and they can't do it anymore. And there's a sea change there. Take a little break here. 736 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 and 805-61802 text. We'll be back. And I've got some Korea to tell you about. And let's see what else here. Well, maybe a little bit about Glenn Beck, Glenn Beck Watch, but bees. We need to get into bees. 523-1450, 805-6180. The Doors, Jim Morrison, one of the greatest voices in history.
Love you till the stars fall from the sky for you and I.
North Korea is known as the Hermit Kingdom. The only country that they have a real relationship with is China, who's kind of the parent of North Korea. Here's the 10 craziest things that you didn't know about North Korea.
There are many fascinating countries around the world, although one of the most bizarre has to be North Korea.
And by the way, the Koreans supposedly have a rocket that could possibly potentially reach to Alaska. They're looking to build a rocket now that will reach all the way to mainland America. So Trump has said, you can't do that. If you try to do that, we're going to stop you. So there's the possibility of a unilateral attack.
Simply because we hardly know anything about it. In this video, we'll check out 10 of the craziest things you probably didn't know about the also secretive North Korea. Number 10. Marijuana is legal. There's no taboo around smoking pot in North Korea. Many locals know the drug and smoke it regularly. Although the use and distribution of hard drugs like crystal meth is condemned by death penalty, marijuana is reportedly neither classified as illegal nor in any way policed. In North Korea, weed is not even considered a drug. As a result, it's the discerning North Korean gentleman's roll-up of choice. Number 9. Government decides your haircut. North Korea has 28 sanctioned haircuts. Women are allowed to choose one of 18 styles. Married women are instructed to keep their hair short, while single ladies are allowed to let loose with longer, curlier locks. Men are prohibited from growing their hair longer than 5 centimeters, 2 inches, while older men can get away with up to 7 centimeters, or 3 inches. Number 8. Ghost City. There's a ghost city on the border to encourage South Koreans to enter. According to the Korean government, the village of Kijongdong, located in the north half of the Korean demilitarized zone, contains a 200-family collective farm, serviced by a childcare center, kindergarten, schools, and a hospital. However, observations from the south suggest that it's actually a ghost town, created to encourage South Korean defection. Until 2004, massive loudspeakers mounted on several of the buildings continuously delivered North Korea propaganda broadcasts in great detail and urging disgruntled South Koreans to cross the border. Number 7. No free time. North Korea insists on a 6-day work week with another day of enforced volunteer work, which ensures the average citizen has virtually no free time. It seems that everyone is automatically given a job by the government after high school and stuck with that job for life. However, the system is breaking down, and North Koreans now have to earn money of their own by bribing their factory bosses, for example, to let them go to work in markets. Number 6. Limited rights. Human rights in North Korea are severely limited. Despite numerous rights being de jure guaranteed by the country's constitution, in practice, there is no de facto right to free speech, and the only radio, television, music, and news providers that are deemed legal are those operated by the government. Also, if one person violates a law or is sent to a prison camp, it affects their whole family. Grandparents, parents, and children of the violator are sent to work with them. Number 5. Social categories. There are 51 social categories ranked by their loyalty to the regime, based on political, social, and economic background for direct ancestors, as well as behavior by relatives. The Songbun, a North Korean system of ascribed status, is used to determine whether an individual is trusted with responsibility, given opportunities within North Korea, or even receives adequate food. Songbun affects access to educational and employment opportunities, and particularly whether a person is eligible to join North Korea's ruling party. Number 4. Tallest building. For 20 years, the world's tallest hotel was a 105-story empty pyramid in Pyongyang. With 105 floors, the Ryongyong Hotel was designed to be the world's tallest hotel at the end of the 80s, but the construction was halted in 1992 as the country entered a period of economic crisis after the fall of the Soviet Union. A Japanese newspaper estimated the cost of the hotel at $750 million,
which is 2% of North Korea's GDP. For over a decade, the unfurnished building sat vacant and without windows, appearing as a massive concrete shell. Number 3. Largest military in the world. Believe it or not, North Korea has the largest military in the world, including active, reserved, and parliamentary, with 7.7 million servicemen and women. To give you an idea of just how big that is, the US has an estimated 1.5 million active military personnel. And with the nation celebrating its first successful test of a submarine-launched missile, the country's leader, Kim Jong-un, says the US mainland is now within striking range of its nuclear weapons. Number 2. It's year 105 in North Korea. While we're in the year 2016, the North Koreans are still living in the year of 105. Ever since 1997, people in North Korea have been using the so-called Juche calendar, according to which this year's has to be the 105th one. The calendar was first introduced 3 years after Kim II Sung's death. The calendar's numbering system uses Sung's birth date as year one. This means that North Koreans see 1912 as Juche 1. Number 1. Concentration camps. Hoeryong Concentration Camp in North Korea currently holds 50,000 men, women, and children who suffer a level of slavery, torture, and experimentation comparable to the Holocaust. One ex-guard who defected from North Korea guessed that about 2,000 people die of malnutrition each year in the concentration camp, but that the number of inmates stays constant at 50,000 thanks to an equal number of incoming prisoners.
Few facts on North Korea. So anyway, it is the North Koreans who are most likely to challenge the United States for some bizarre reason. What are the options for the United States? Here is a program that came out about 5 days ago, or a little blurb from the Daily Conversation. Pretty interesting.
Nuclear standoff with North Korea seems like it's reaching a boiling point. President Trump has drawn a red line that the North will not acquire a missile capable of striking the U.S. mainland. But the North is not listening. They've been increasing their missile tests as they try to develop a rocket that can hit an American city. So let's take a look at the options the U.S. has for dealing with North Korea. North Korea is the only country that has tested a nuclear weapon in the 21st century. In fact, it's done it 5 times. After Kim Jong-un became supreme leader in 2011, the North began ramping up the frequency of its missile tests. In response to the growing threat, President Obama ordered the U.S. military to use cyber and electronic strikes to sabotage the North's test launches, just like it had done to Iran's rogue nuclear facilities a few years before. The move worked, according to a recent investigative report by the New York Times. Soon, a large number of the North's military rockets began to explode, veer off course, disintegrate in midair, and plunge into the sea. One medium-range missile failed on 88% of its test launches, far higher than the 13% failure rate of the Soviet-era weapon on which it was based. These security breaches enraged Kim, who ordered the execution of 5 senior officials by a firing squad of anti-aircraft guns. But despite the setbacks, the North says it's almost ready to test its first missile capable of reaching the United States. Even if this is just big talk, one thing is clear. Our military does not currently have the ability to stop the North's nuclear weapons program. After it successfully launched a satellite in 2016, it now may be able to strike targets up to 4,000 miles away. That not only puts South Korea and Japan well in range, but also India, parts of northern Australia, U.S. bases in the Pacific, and even Anchorage. But to hit the American mainland, they'll need to bust out the big boys. U.S. intelligence estimates the North has 6 KN-08s. And is developing an upgraded version called the KN-14. Neither has been tested yet, but both could theoretically hit us here in the States. To defend against this type of intercontinental ballistic missile threat, we have a multi-layered, partially land-based missile defense system protecting the U.S. mainland and our allies. But those systems have never been tested in live combat, have had high failure rates when tested so far, and would likely fail against a barrage of more than a handful of missiles. President Obama was so concerned by the situation, he warned President Trump that this was the most urgent problem confronting the United States. So what exactly are Trump's options? Option number 1 has just been taken: deploy the THAAD missile defense system to South Korea. The Terminal High Altitude Area Defense gives the Pacific Alliance another layer of protection against ballistic missiles alongside their existing Patriot systems and Aegis-equipped naval destroyers. By placing THAAD so close to the North, the U.S., Korea, and Japan have instantly enhanced their ability to track and respond to missile launches. But China is protesting the move, saying it's common knowledge that the monitoring and early warning radius of THAAD reaches far beyond the Korean Peninsula and compromises China's strategic security. They argue THAAD's deployment could set off an arms race in the region,
but this seems hypocritical considering how much China, as the North's lone ally and largest trading partner, has already enabled its erratic behavior, not to mention China's rapid militarization of the South China Sea. Option two is for Trump to double down on Obama's effort to sabotage North Korea's missile tests. But this strategy could have unintended consequences if it emboldens Russia and China to try and disrupt U.S. launch systems. Option number three is to put more diplomatic pressure on the North through China. This interview from last year offers some insight into how Trump views this approach.
North Korea's nuclear effort is the top threat to the United States. What would you do to deal with that reclusive country?
I would get China to make that guy disappear in one form or another very quickly. And let me tell you, people say,
how do you make him disappear, and assassinate him?
Let me just tell you, no. Well, you know, I've heard of worse things, frankly. I mean, this guy's a bad dude. But we have a lot of power over China. Don't underestimate.
Option number four is bold, to put nuclear weapons back in South Korea in hopes that the doctrine of mutually assured destruction would serve as a check against the North. This would probably just provoke the North's weapons pursuit, while suddenly ending the decades-old U.S. policy favoring nuclear disarmament with significant consequences around the world. Lastly, option number five is the most risky and aggressive, preemptively striking the North. President Obama considered this option, but ultimately concluded that accurately targeting the North's constantly moving leadership and weapons would be nearly impossible. The risks of a miss were way too high. Any attack that didn't immediately defeat the regime would be guaranteed to start a war, with horrific consequences for millions of people on the entire peninsula, especially for the South if China rushed to the North's defense. And even if the regime was defeated, you'd then own the fates of the 25 million North Koreans, many of whom would pour over the borders into China and the South. We'll know sooner rather than later which steps the U.S.
All right, so it's pretty scary, really, what's going on over there. So here's a question for you, and this is for Frankie as well, since Frankie is just shooting off his little missiles as texts. And I asked him if the bottle had let him down again. And he said, I don't have a bottle. You need to check with your Cheeto-colored con kook guy in White House. Trumper is the USA version of that crazy con kook in Korea. So why is it that these communist states always spin out dictators who are then worshipped as gods? If leftism, and it all goes back to this, for the lack of a better description, Marxism, which Marx is just a summary of all the leftism that was going on at the time that he was writing. If leftism, if socialism, the belief system of these, all of these TV talking heads and all the media and the political and the Hollywood and everything. If these people are so brilliant, why do you buy into a system that worships failed gods? People who are put up on a pedestal like Obama and worshiped, and then they fall apart. When it's always the same thing when these people run for office, they're always talked about as the smartest person in history, the greatest speaker in history, Bill Clinton, the most brilliant man alive, Barack Obama, greatest speaker in history. It's just, you know, something you want to choke on a little bit. We'll take a break here and come back and finish her up.
Yay!
So how crazy is Kim Jong-il, or whatever the heck his name is, Kim Jong-dung? Check this out.
It is ruled by an unpredictable young dictator. Now in his early 30s, Kim Jong-un has shown that he is every bit as ruthless as his father and grandfather who ruled before him. Not only has he continued inflicting a harsh oppressive rule towards North Korean people, Kim is also not above putting his own family members to death should they fall out of favor with him. In 2013, Kim accused his 67-year-old uncle and advisor, Jong Song-taek, of plotting against the North Korean government. Jiang was stripped of his post, tried by a special military tribunal, and abruptly executed. This followed with a purge that extended to Jiang's family members and supporters, including an official who was burnt alive with a flamethrower. More recently, in February 2017, Kim Jong-un's half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, was killed in an airport in Malaysia by suspected North Korean assassins. According to South Korean intel, Kim also had once executed his defense chief with an anti-aircraft gun because the man dozed off during a meeting. Kim Jong-un, who was educated in the West, is rather insane when it comes to removing perceived threats against his rule. Since he came to power, the number of mass public executions has risen, and nuclear threats towards the West have also increased. Number 8.
So he's insane at some level. And here's Tillerson.
Facing what was once a regional security challenge, but today North Korea threatens not only its regional neighbors, but the United States and other countries. Efforts toward North Korea to achieve peaceful stability over the last two decades have failed to make us safer. The U.S. and our allies have repeatedly reassured North Korea's leaders that we seek only peace, stability, and economic prosperity for Northeast Asia. As proof of our intent, America has provided $1.3 billion.
Well, anyway, he says that the patience, time for patience has run out. Here is a little Jim Gaffigan on winter leaving. Winter is over, friends.
Winter's still here. Can you believe it? Like death, taxes, and kale, it may never go away. This week, the Northeast was hit with a nor'easter, which is like Easter, but instead of eggs and candy, you get snow and your screaming children kept home from school. It's harder to deal with a snowstorm in March. Snow and cold are interesting for about a week in December. Then winter turns into a dead poinsettia that sits around your house making you depressed. Oh, on Wednesday, I was invited to go cross-country skiing. I live in New York City. I can't even believe cross-country skiing is even a sport. Hey, you know how in downhill skiing, there's that awkward part of getting over to the lift? Well, what if we just did that? Cross-country skiing seems like a sport that someone came up with after they bought skis and discovered they lived nowhere near a mountain.
Well, that doesn't matter. We don't need a mountain. We can just ski cross-country.
Most winter sports seem like some last-ditch effort you'd employ to escape the abominable snowman. Look. The only way we're going to get out of here is if we cross-country ski.
Really?
Yeah. That or snowshoe.
Well, what are we going to eat?
Unfortunately, we're going to have to ice fish.
I don't know.
How are we going to get down that mountain? We're going to have to sled down on a toboggan or a luge thing. Couldn't we just get a group of dogs to pull us out of here? People that enjoy winter generally seem mentally unstable. I just enjoy going outside when it's freezing and doing things nobody would want to do. If you were caught doing some of these winter activities...